You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
'24 marked a solar revolution. Solar energy accounted for 81% of all renewable capacity added globally, outpacing wind, hydro, and even the most optimistic forecasts. It took the world nearly 70 years to install its first terawatt of solar capacity, and just 2 years to double it. We're not watching history unfold, we're standing in the middle of it. But here's the real question. What does a solar boom mean for Africa? Can we plug into the power shift, not just as consumers, but as creators, innovators, and decision makers? Tonight's guest has spent the last two decades engineering power, not just metaphorically, but literally too. Fremi Kandeke is a Zambian-based electrical and electronics engineer, power systems protection specialist, and one of the minds helping steer Copperbelt Energy Corporation, PLC, through the transition into renewable energy, from massive utility scale PV projects to domestic level installations. He brings technical expertise and lived experience to one of the most urgent energy conversations on the continent. He's a husband, a father of four, a seven-day Adventist elder, and a stewardship leader, a man who understands both the duty of light and the discipline of stewardship. So tonight we're asking, is solar Africa's next great leap forward, or are we underestimating the real costs and complexity of going solar? Let's plug in. Elder Fremi, good evening.
Good evening, thank you. Good evening, Sister Mbobane.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. And yourself?
I'm doing well, thank you. I'd love for us to start where most people start, right? Money. What are some of the real cost considerations individuals or businesses should make before undertaking a solar installation?
All right. Solar installations are the modern thing. Mm. And I think before one thinks of installing a solar system, the first thing is to see if they have enough funds to fund the project of procuring equipment, looking at the experts that can install the equipment for them. Mm. Even before it is commissioned, funds need to be put in place. So I think the first thing is shop around and then see how much funds one has to install the system.
And what can somebody sort of have in mind when thinking about this? Is it a really expensive exercise to undertake?
Not really. I think the first thing that one has to look at is what is the motivation for installing.
Load shedding.
So you do the cost. Load you do shedding. The cost benefit analysis.
Yeah.
Yeah. So one has to look at what is it that is motivating the idea of shifting from the grid to solar. Or if one is talking about maybe putting up an installation that will sit off the grid, then one has to look at what will it take for them to bring grid power to their site, or what will be the benefits of not bringing grid power, maybe they go solar. So you do a cost-benefit analysis. And I think depending on the circumstances, then one has to make a decision to go on solar, purely, or bring in a grid power and then do what is called the hybrid.
Yeah.
So the hybrid is where one has to maybe be on the grid, and then alternatively they have solar to use when the grid is off.
Mm. You know, when you start talking cost benefits analysis, my financial valuation and accounting mind is working on overdrive. And I'm wondering, for somebody sitting at home, is this something that they can do because it's easy to understand the components that make up this installation? Or is it something that will require a professional like yourself to do and walk them through?
Well, The cost benefits can be financial. Some of them are intangible. They are passed on over time. So if you're talking about a simple system for domestic use, the cost benefit can almost be immediate, because I think then you start to realize that you no longer have to receive bills from the utility. So you do away with the bills. And some of the benefits that come in, that then you start to actually generate a power that you can sell to the grid if you have got pure supplies, if you have got equipment that's high-tech, then you instead of you receiving bills, you may actually end up pushing power into the grid and then make a bit more money. Depending on the national policy, they might give you cash. Mm-hmm. Or if they can't give you cash, then they may end up giving you a relief on the future bills that you may have.
Yeah.
So instead of them bidding you, asking you to pay, then they may end up owing you, such that then when you need to use grid power, instead of you receiving a bill, all they tell you is say, oh, for that power that you supplied us,
you use your tab.
So that is those are some of the benefits that you get. So you completely off the grid. I mean, you completely off the bills, but you also have the benefit of generating enough to sell to your neighbors, to sell to the grid, and then you at a future date, you avoid future bills.
Mm. And I'm happy you touched on that, because I was wondering, are there any local or regional financial incentives or tax benefits that make solar more accessible within our African markets?
Yeah, there is. I think countries are realizing the benefits that come with the usage of solar.
Mm.
More especially in Southern Africa. I think Southern Africa, we've been grappling with the issues of power.
Yeah.
Because I think initially most of our generation was hydro.
Mm-hmm.
So with the change in the climatic conditions, then we have had to grapple with issues of drought. Zambia last year experienced one of the worst droughts ever. And I think in the region, Zimbabwe, we are in the same category.
Mm.
So these lessons have taught us that we need to shift. So then governments have started to incentivize these things.
Oh, lovely.
So they are putting up incentives to encourage nationals to import these things. For instance, in Zambia, these things have now been zero rated, meaning import solar equipment.
Mm.
You can import solar equipment, and then at the border, you not pay anything. All you need to do is produce your papers. Mm-hmm. The guys will stamp on them. You drive in. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
So those are some of the incentives. And I think many countries have realized that with the power challenges that is there from hydro, then we can alternatively go for solar. And they're encouraging that to relieve the grid, because I think the grid is most stressed because there's so little generation from hydro, but the consumption is growing day by day.
Oh,
so to provide some relief on the grid, people are being encouraged. For instance, yesterday in Zambia, our president, Hakainde Hichilema, was commissioning a 100-megawatt solar plant in Chisamba.
Mm.
It's a town just about, I think, 45 kilometers from Lusaka, our capital. So when he was doing that commissioning, one of the things that he spoke about was to encourage citizens to use their rooftops and install solar systems so that they can put some relief on the hydro system, and thereby giving relief to the grid and help close the power deficit that is currently there. So incentives are being given, I think, not just in Zambia, but I think most countries in Africa have realized that there's need to promote this alternative use of energy. Moreover, it's clean,
and it's
talking about clean energy.
Yes. That initiative you're mentioning now by the president is actually so interesting, because as you're speaking, I'm thinking, so the cost of, because I can imagine if the grid is too overburdened, it comes at a cost for the state, right? So for whatever peristate that is running it. So the cost of the grid being overburdened outweighs the revenue that would be generated if people were on the grid. that's just something I'm thinking about in my mind, and I'd love for you to give me perspective on. So with those initiatives, because the truth is, with every unit of power that we use, that is revenue for the states and all the other contractors, if that is how they're running it. So the encouragement of people being off the grid by the head of states, is it an acknowledgement? Okay, obviously it is an acknowledgement that people are struggling with power, but it, does it mean that they are okay with foregoing a portion of their revenue just to put people off the grid?
Yes, under the circumstances, I think now it's an issue of looking at which one is the lesser evil, if I may use it that way. So then you see the national utility, of course, has made significant losses due to load shedding.
Mm.
And I'm sure South Africa has been grappling with load shedding.
Last time
I visited SA, it was bad. But I think later on, when I came last year in, I came through last year in July.
Yeah.
You guys were celebrating that they had managed to overcome load shedding. Whether that is true or not.
Well, it had been a number of days, but now they're threatening that it's going to come back. So, hey, we're not in the clear yet.
So then even in Zambia, our national utility, ZESCO, has made significant losses because as you said, for every kilowatt that a household consumes, that's income for them.
Mm.
And then they have ended up losing that. But then it's an idea of what can we do if we do not have what commodity to sell. Then we can point people to what can help them.
Yes.
So I think there's significant loss in as far as income is concerned for the national utility.
Yes.
But then the president looks at the bigger picture because people need to, drives needs to learn. Businesses needs to run.
For sure.
I think in this, under the circumstances, the most affected are the smaller businesses that can't afford. All they have to do is wait for the grid power to be available because they can't afford to have a genset running for some time. Fuel is expensive. The genset is expensive. So such smaller businesses have ended up struggling for years. I think in Zambia, we began to grapple with this issue of load shedding around 2015.
Hmm.
So I think the government has just realized that there's no another alternative but to go solar.
Yeah.
And they're encouraging that through a policy shift.
Mm.
Previously, they would want to protect a utility by keeping quiet.
Mm.
But I think they have noticed that it's hurting the economy, it's hurting the citizens, and I think they have opened up and they have given up. They have given enough relief in terms of cost of importations, and we have seen that the cost of these things have now started going down.
Mm.
I think a year ago or so, to import equipment that was solar related, these were very expensive because people had to pay a duty at the border and there were no incentives before that. So it was costly.
Mm.
But now the cost started going down. I think we are seeing that solar panels, inverters, batteries, I think these things are now costing reasonably.
Yeah, and maybe they'll make up the revenue. Maybe they'll make up the revenue in taxes when the businesses are actually running and they're not losing revenue because they don't have power.
Yeah. And tell you what, for example, even the national utility is actually gone into commercial installation of solar panels.
Whoa.
The same system I was talking about, which was being commissioned, the 100 megawatt plant yesterday. It's actually a national utility project.
Yeah.
Of course, in partnership with the banks and the Chinese the government.
Yeah.
But it will eventually be owned by our national utility, which is ZESCO.
Mm.
So it's a government project. So even the government has realized that it's not just a good idea to encourage citizens to install these things or private companies like the one I work for. Because the company I work for, we are actually into this business of installing solar plants in Zambia, but we're a private utility.
Mm.
But then even the national utility, ZESCO, the government has encouraged them to invest in solar. And I think on their side, this is one of the one they commissioned yesterday in Zambia was the biggest plant owned by ZESCO.
Yeah.
It's a 100 megawatt plant. They have got other smaller ones and dotted around the country.
Oh, this is such amazing work.
That is what's happening. So even the national utility is installing solar plants.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And from your experience, how long does it typically take to break even on perhaps a residential or commercial solar project?
Well, for residential, I think it's almost immediate. Of course, the I must mention that the cost of installation is initially deemed to be huge because you have to make a one-off expenditure. But then the benefits, they start to accrue almost immediate.
Yeah.
Because then when you, if you choose to install the solar system at your place, depending on the one that you have put up, let's pick an example of a hybrid system where there's grid as well as solar. So then you begin to notice that the things that you were worrying about, monthly bills, they reduce, and it's even much faster if you have gone off grid.
Yeah,
where you just say, okay, I'll only be using a solar and no grid power. You don't disconnect, of course, from the national utility. You leave their cable hanging, and when they come to check, they'll find it. But you design your system such that completely you go off their network. You only be using it under emergencies. Then the benefits accrue almost immediately, because then you realize that you stop paying bills.
Yep.
You are no longer inconvenienced because you see the load shedding comes with a lot of inconveniences. You can't listen to TV, you can't watch TV, you can't listen to radio, you can't do anything that needs power at home. Even your phone, just to keep your phone charged, you have got to go to. So the benefits are almost immediate, almost immediate, yes. And as you move in the usage, maybe a year or two, you completely realize that you are missing something by having to wait to buy a solar product. Of course, as I mentioned earlier, the cost is what is inhibiting almost everyone who would want to go solar.
Yes.
Because initially it's a huge investment one has to make, but the emphasis I'm putting is that the benefits are also almost immediate.
Yeah. And many people worry about maintenance where solar installation is concerned. What are some of the ongoing costs post-installation that people don't often anticipate?
Okay. Solar equipment, not much of maintenance is needed. The inverter themselves are designed such that they are maintenance-free, so they are sealed. In such a way that from the manufacturing plant, once they are sold, they're almost maintenance free. But then the issue is on the panels, because the panels will be mounted in the open space.
Yes,
they could be on the rooftop,
elements.
They could be on the ground, and they'll gather dust. So one thing I wanted to mention is that then maintenance on these units. So the battery and the inverter are almost maintenance free.
Okay.
I would say they are maintenance free, but the maintenance aspect comes in on the panels, because the panels will gather dust, and as dust settles on the panels, then the efficiency of power generation gets more pronounced.
Oh wow!
It gets affected in the negative. So you start to see that you are not able to generate enough power. Even when there's enough light. Remember, your solar panels are working on light sensing.
Yes.
So if there's a accumulation of dust on them, then the sensitivity to light is reduced. And that speaks now in terms of the wattage that you're going to generate per panel. And ultimately, your output is affected. So the maintenance aspect comes in the sense that you have got to schedule regular cleaning of the panels to keep them efficient.
Okay. So it's something that can be mitigated. It's not like they just keep deteriorating forever and ever. Amen.
No. they don't. So you just have to keep cleaning them, keep cleaning them. and they've got a lifespan. These things have got a lifespan of, I think, 10 to 15 years.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Because once they are installed, really no one is disturbing them. Mm. So the only time that you should worry about is when you're trying to dust them, remove the accumulation of dust.
Oh, fantastic.
So they are very much efficient. Mm. And also easy to operate. Even if you are not non-technical, if you get the experts, they come and install them in your house, you don't need to worry about any aspects of the maintenance, except for cleaning, as I have mentioned, the panels.
Yeah.
So they are maintenance-free almost.
Oh, fantastic. Fantastic. Now, there's growing conversation around solar farms taking up arable farms or arable land. Is this a legitimate concern in Zambia and similar markets, or is there a way to strike a balance?
Well, I would say at an individual level, it's not much. Of course, it depends on the size of the solar the solar plant.
Yes.
If you allow me to just talk about the scheme, the way it works out.
Please.
So you have a solar panel that is rated in terms of how much power it can give, it can generate as a unit. Then you have to connect these either in series or in parallel so that you can get a string that will give you the required output.
Mm.
So depending on the size of the solar panels that you have, and the size here, I'm talking about the physical dimensions.
Okay.
And the number of them required. If it is really for individual usage, even at a farm, you don't need much land to mount solar panels. Because remember, these are panels that can even be fitted on the rooftop of a house.
Mm.
So bring that on the ground. It's not much space that you need for individual usage.
Yeah.
But then should you think of going commercial, because you're going to do for commercial purposes, then you need to start thinking of large spaces. Again, you have to weigh against your needs and or the power that you need to generate against the space available. I would say in Zambia, we haven't got that problem because I think we've got enough land, even for individual usage.
Yeah.
Land is not a factor.
Yeah.
Where you're going to put up panels, if you fly your plane on top, you can't even see that you have used a bigger chunk of it. So it's not a big issue that it will take arable land.
Mm.
And I think we have not developed to that level where we can put up panels that would begin to raise concerns about the piece of land that they would consume. So it's not an issue. It's not an issue. Even at an individual level, it's not much of a problem. Because I'll tell you what, from the practical aspect, we've got a plant that we're putting up here in Kitwe.
Mm.
The company I work for, I think we as Adia mentioned, we do most of these solar projects.
Yes.
So we are putting up a 126 megawatt plant. Almost slightly bigger than the one that was being commissioned yesterday by the president.
Mm-hmm.
That one is 100 megawatt. We are putting up a 126 megawatt plant.
Mm.
And this is just sitting, I think, on the under 10 hectares of land.
Oh,
so
wow, okay.
It's not much.
Yeah.
It's not much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can already anticipate what you're going to say for this one, but there's another hot topic, and that's carbon footprint. And I know we touched on it earlier. Do the emissions from actually producing these solar panels ever outweigh the benefits of using them?
The costs of producing solar panels or the carbon footprint or the plants that are built to manufacture these solar panels, the energy used maybe clean or non-clean, but I think once you install a solar system, the benefits that it brings, I think it outweighs. I'm using that comparative. It outweighs the initial carbon effect that may have been used at the manufacturing plant, because then you kind of remove the possibility of using the carbon emitting substances like genset.
Yes, yes.
Because the alternative would be for you to go with generators.
For sure.
Or you use diesel gens. In Zambia, we use charcoal. This is the coal. All these things have got benefit. I mean, the effect of releasing carbon in the air using diesel gens and charcoal is more pronounced than the benefits that you get when a solar panel has been manufactured and brought. Then for years you never see, you never use or you never use a diesel gen.
Yeah.
So let's do this simple analogy. You have a plant that may have been used to generate power and then manufacture the panels. This plant may be in China.
Mm-hmm.
If in Zambia we do not have the solar panels, we continue cutting trees so that we can produce charcoal and be able to cook.
Mm.
And then somebody must, or you run a genset so that they have got power, and that genset will be emitting carbon almost on a daily basis. But then that panel, once it's brought, it takes away all these things. So the carbon footprint from the manufacturing plant is run over or is watered down by the continuous service or the continuous usage of solar panels. Because once they are installed, all these things disappear off the scene.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And what happens to excess energy then? Does it go to waste, or are there now better models for storage and redistribution?
All right. Excess energy... There are ways in which to handle it.
Uh-huh.
I'll give you, a few scenarios of how you can deal with the issues of excess energy.
Yeah.
Okay, so the when you design your system and you for one reason or the other, you have what excess power or not excess per se, maybe we can say at a time when you're not using it, we can also consider that as excess energy because maybe at certain times of the day, you are at work and they are not using, your TVs are off, a number of household appliances are off. We can categorize that as excess energy.
Yeah.
But also in the same vein, we can say excess energy can come from just an oversized solar installation. Maybe all you need is 5 kilowatts of power, but then you go and buy a 10 kilowatt and you install a system that is 10 kilowatts. So what do you do with the excess power? So first thing that you do with excess energy, if you have a smart system or if you've got an inverter that is smart, is to enroll for the sale of that power, excess power, to the grid. So remember what I talked about, the smart grid system where you can actually export power from your home into the grid.
Yep.
So that is one way to handle the excess power. You procure equipment that is smart enough to allow for the flow of power in and out of your installation.
Yes.
If it's flowing out of your installation into the grid, you're making money. Or you're making a saving because the power that you're selling today, tomorrow when you need to use the grid power, then you'll not have to pay anything. All that you do is get yourself credited the power that you had exported the previous day.
Yeah.
That's one way of handling excess power. The second one is to use what are called energy storage systems.
Okay.
So inverters, solar inverters come with the panels and batteries. So the battery is used to then store your excess energy.
Mm.
So the energy that you are not using, so assuming it's daytime, the inverter is designed in such a way that it can provide power for the immediate usage in the house or in the installation, if it's an office space or whatever it is, people are working, it's during the day.
Mm.
The solar panels will give the inverter enough power to supply the current loads and the excess power it is using to charge the battery. So the battery is now being used as an energy storage for the excess power that you don't need now, that you might come and need when the sun goes down. Because in the evening, when there's no sun, then you need the battery.
Yes.
So that's how you deal secondly with the issues of excess power.
Mm-hmm.
The The two may give you almost the best way to handle excess power.
Yeah.
But there's also another aspect that comes in. Some excess power that is not being used and not being pushed in the grid. It's not being used in the battery because the battery is full. That power electrically gets converted. As you know, energy cannot be lost. It cannot be converted.
Yes.
So that energy gets converted into heat. So your solar panels begin to heat up.
Okay.
They begin to heat up. They will take that power as heat energy. But that heating has got no detrimental effect on the machine, apart from the fact that it reduces the efficiency. But then the fact that you have got excess, that means that you don't need an efficient system.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it is lost as heat energy, or it is converted into heat, and the solar panels begin to heat up. But they are designed to absorb that heat or withstand that heat. So it's not much of an issue. So these are the three ways in which you deal with the excess energy.
Sure. I feel like I'm back in school in my electrical engineering class. And this is so nice because I'm not failing. I'm actually understanding exactly what you're saying. You know, as you're speaking also, I'm thinking about how industrialization and the advancements in technology has actually, and I don't know if I'll be able to articulate this well, that when I'm hearing you talk about how we're generating power, literally getting power from the sun, something that was there from the very beginning, it sounds like we went all the way around power generation only to come back to the original design. It's so fascinating for me. And I know, of course, we realized, oh, there's coal that we can burn and convert to electricity. But it just sounds like we went all this way only to come back here. It's like the Israelites and the trip that they took. It could have been a couple of days, but ended up being 40
going
years.
Going to the promised
exactly.
land.
Exactly. The sun has always been there. We just needed to know how to create these panels and stop this whole thing of coal to... but anyway, that's even besides the conversation that we're having.
Yeah, sure. Our God is gracious. I think as we see in the creation week, we see that God put up everything that humanity needed. And I think part of that was the sun. And I think we've taken long to discover this, but God had put it in place.
Yeah.
And I think his intention was that then we should be able to utilize these things to our benefit. And I think we have just realized them too late.
Sure.
If you notice this thing, I think in Africa, this is when this thing is coming up. There's even some element of mistrust. Others have got misgivings on the usage of solar panels.
Mm.
There are a lot of myths, a lot of unfounded fears around the safety of these panels. But these are things that our friends in the developed world have been using for some time, and they have perfected the art. So you find that if you fly into the USA, you fly into Europe, today you find their rooftops are littered with these solar panels. And for many years, they have been running these systems. I think Africa, we trying to come on board. I think the best we can do is to realize the potential that lies in the light that God gave us. When the Bible says, God said, let there be light,
and
I think it was not just for us to see things.
For sure.
But it was also for us to use, to generate energy and then keep ourselves a home or be able to use these things to our benefit. So it's more than just for, the light was not just for us to see things, but I think God intended it that we should use it for more than just to see things.
100%. And I'm so happy you went there, because that was literally going to be my next question, right? What are the biggest mindset shifts that are required for individuals, families, and maybe not so much for organizations, because they're realizing what is needed or why they need the power generation. But for families and individuals, what are some of the mindset shifts you've seen are required for them to embrace solar?
Yeah, so I think we need to do a lot of sensitization, a lot of social engagements where we can discuss these things freely, more especially us as experts.
Yeah.
We need to inspire the confidence in the minds of the general public that these things are not meant to kill anybody. I think they have been type tested. Mm. They are safe for usage. Of course, everything that has been created in this scenic world is got a potential to harm.
Yeah.
But I think we need to then educate our general public that these things are safe. They are not. Of course, there's potential to cause harm, more especially if you buy them from unreliable sources, because as anything that comes, it could be a fridge in the house.
Yeah.
You need to get them from reputable sources. Mm-hmm. You need to get them from the experts who are. So the safety aspect is something that we need to assure our citizens, and I think that should be a starting point. If there's to be acceptance, people need to be educated and be told what type of tests are done on these things before they are released into industry. And just as a quality assurance aspect, people need to be educated by the experts who understand these things, that they are very safe. I'll tell you what, maybe in your country, South Africa, Botswana, people use much of gas stoves for cooking.
Yep, that's true.
And even when we are not, before you began to grapple with issues of load shedding, I think gas was an alternative for you guys in Botswana and in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you, that was a problem in Zambia, not until a few years ago, when people realized, after all, if in Botswana it's being used and no one has died, in South Africa it's being used, now there's that acceptance. And I think the usage of gas stoves in Zambia is now on the rise. Similarly, for us to see acceptance on the solar panels or solar product, I think there's need to assure and array the myths that are around there, and basically explain the reality of things, that these things are safe for usage, and they are not meant to harm anybody, but they're actually meant to give you financial relief
for sure
in the long run, and they are also meant to cushion the problem that you may be grappling with of energy, so that then you don't have to rely on one source.
Yeah,
you can actually do a hybrid system or completely do away with the grid, and you can still live. Most of these people that live on farms and they're not connected to the grid, they use solar products.
They do,
and they have got solar geysers. They have got the solar panels on their roof, so they're able to boil water. They're able to do pumps. You know, at a farm, you can do a solar pump. So you can actually be on the grid and live as though you are in Pretoria, CBD, or you are in Joburg, or you are in Lusaka, capital city, but you are at a farm. So people need to be given the confidence that these things are safe.
Yeah.
And education is a beginning point.
And you know, when you talk about geysers on solar, so the geyser that I have at my place is solar driven rather. And can I tell you the amount of electricity I've saved and the amount of money I've saved? Because geysers take up a lot of electricity. That's why you find people having to switch it off during the day. But to know that to know that it's just running on solar has been so revolutionary for me. Literally the only time that I used to switch on my geyser is during winter, because it's not as hot. But in summer, spring, all those other seasons, I'm cruising nicely.
And if you had, imagine those days before you switched to solar geyser, if you forgot to switch off, then you are at the office and you realize the geyser is off. That morning or that day is spoiled until you go home for lunch to go and switch off. And by the time you are going there, you find all your electricity is gone. So these things are meant to benefit us. And I think that's why we are discussing them. It's to ensure that we change the mind of those that are skeptical about these things and encourage the usage of green and clean energy, because green and clean energy is what will save us from the future troubles. Part of the problems we are grappling with have been driven by the usage of carbon.
You see,
and I think this same drought you talked about that hammered Southern Africa, Zambia, and Zimbabwe, and Malawi, we are hit badly hit last year. We had food shortages, we had electricity problems. The source can actually be traced to the usage of carbon.
It's the 40 years so wandering in the wilderness.
We are actually harming the earth that God created in its pure form.
40
and
years.
And as you said earlier, I wish we had realized these things early enough.
Yes.
Then we would have gone solar and would not be grappling with these droughts and weather pattern changes that we are grappling with.
Mm.
Yeah.
Now I want to tap in and leverage your expertise as somebody who's been in this industry for so long, and also just as an elder, you know, what would you say to young African engineers or even entrepreneurs wanting to enter the renewable energy sector? Is there room for innovation, or is the space just too capital intensive?
Well, the words of encouragement to the young ones is that there's no limit to what they can do. And I think Africa is hungry. Is thirsty for alternatives, alternative use of energy.
Mm.
So it would be a good idea to actually consider beginning a business or starting a business that is meant to provide energy solutions.
Mm.
Because these things, as I earlier said in the example I gave you in Zambia, at national level, the state is conceding defeat to some extent by telling citizens whom they are supposed to supply power.
Yes.
They are telling them,
go
and buy solar. And so it means the problem is big.
Mm.
Because they would want to, ideally, they would want to discourage the usage of these things so that then they can make money for the state. So the problem is big, because then it basically you have governments that are conceding to say, look, we can't manage to do these things on our own.
Yeah.
And I think in the past 2 or 3 years, the president has been to commission some of our solar plants here in Cobra Belt.
Mm.
And every time he comes, he's telling us to say, look, let's keep investing, let's invest in these things and tilt the trajectory so that we do not just depend on hydro, which has proven so unreliable because of the weather patterns.
Mm.
So then by doing that, it's basically encouraging private sector investment.
Yeah.
So the young ones or those that have got the resources and have got the means, it wouldn't be a bad idea to consider investing in solar products and be able to connect themselves to the grid. Because once you have an investment that is significant enough to allow you a connection into the grid, then you begin to participate in the energy sector.
Yeah.
And you know, the energy sector is so open such that using what is called the open access policies that the Southern African countries have opened up, Zambia is able to get power from Namibia through the grid and sell.
Mm-hmm.
So whoever has got the capacity to generate, they are not limited anymore, because there's what is called the open access regime. Where whoever has got the capacity to generate enough capacity, the excess they can push into the grid.
Mm.
And depending on the megawatts that you're bringing on board, that translates into US dollar income. These young ones can capitalize, and this can make them be future millionaires and billionaires because of solar.
Mm.
So solar energy is lucrative. Of course, it's capital intensive, which requires one to have enough funds. But if you can, or if you can partner, then it is encouraged that people can go into that route.
Mm.
The other thing that I would want to speak of in the partnership arrangement is, you know, we in Africa, we've got enough land,
mm-hmm.
but we may not have the funds to buy equipment. So the partnership can begin with one, looking for investors who have got the finances,
Mm.
And one of the means of production is land. So if you have got land and it's on title, instead of you selling it to an investor to come and put a solar plant, why not tell them to say, come and put it on my farm,
mm-hmm.
and then you and I, we can be partners, and we'll be selling power. You'll be giving me 40%, you partner with Skiste, or you give me 25%, you go with your 75%.
Mm.
And so people should look at it from that angle. Be it youths or just ordinary citizens of African continent, they should be able to jump on this opportunity. Mm. And I'm sure there's no limit to what they can be if they put their mind to it.
Oh, you're speaking to me. I'm already thinking about, maybe this is something that I need to get into. Also, because you've laid it bare, right? There's a huge demand. And I think also just having spoken about what was supposed to be the intentional way of doing things and how we veered off from that, I think for me, there's always a desire to go back to the original design, to, you know, the whole idea of we were made in God's image, so to be restored in that image. And even with things like this, I'm just like, as a steward, it makes sense to take people back to what it was meant to be from the very beginning. And so for me, it's not even just only from a business front, but really from a stewardship front and being the people and living the way that we were meant to live from just the very beginning.
Sure. And I think it would please heaven if we can think of means of generating power in a clean way that does not harm the environment.
The planet, yes.
And I think solar is one of those.
Yeah.
Solar is one of those. The alternative to solar is wind, but I think wind is more complex than solar, because solar, you just need to buy panels already designed by somebody, manufactured. All you need to do is sit at the feet of those that are able to give you a bit more advice on how to arrive at the size of a system that you need. And then you go and buy equipment, you come and install. That's it. You're not worried about anything. The only thing you have to worry about is that maintenance I spoke about, and certain seasons of the year when you have got cloud, because cloud cover begins to affect generation. But tell you what, even in the cloud, on a cloud day, you still not lose complete generation. You'll be maybe hovering around 40-60% generation capacity. So the way of solar is more easier to generate energy than even wind. But we've got also potential for wind in Africa, and I think that can be a topic for another day. But wind then comes in with a lot of the complications, because then you need to worry about the design of the wind vanes. You need to go and worry about the wind speeds. Or you need to have some studies, which studies you don't need to do for a solar system on your house. And the wind vanes are difficult to mount, more especially for smaller or domestic usage. But solar panels, really, it is a thing to go. And it gives you green and clean energy. And I think it gives then the intention of what God intended it to be when he created light.
Yeah.
That we should use light sustainably.
Yes.
But I think we did not realize that in good time.
No.
We went into these oils and fuels that we are igniting carbon, and then we landed ourselves into trouble, and then we are that's when we realized the problem. And I think we, as you touched on the aspect of stewardship, for us to be good stewards, we need to realize what God's intention was when he created light.
Yes.
And I think the purpose is what you just alluded to as we were having a conversation.
You know, as I said earlier, this really did feel like I was back in class at my electrical engineering course there at university. But only this time, because what was different back then is that the way it was taught to us was obviously as part of an ecosystem, right? So I studied mining engineering, just for some context. So it was part of the entire ecosystem, right? But also in that, it wasn't really empowering to the individual on this is what you can do outside of the scope of what you're studying for. So I'm thinking now, if I ever decided to go back into the mining engineering space, let's say for all intents and purposes, I start my own mine, I'm already conscious of the fact that we're going to generate power possibly using the sun, if it's going to be possible and if it's going, the demand is going to be met. And so what was different about this particular lesson for me is just now I'm looking at the world in terms of what I can contribute to the world, and the different ways as well to use the tools and even the resources, the natural resources that God gave us to actually power up our lives, because that is what power is. It's powering up our lives and everything that we do, 100%. And so from this conversation, for me, I really learned that, you know, whether it is utility scale transformation or backyard panels, or whether we're powering up boardrooms or even the pulpit, the conversation proved one thing to me, that solar is both technology and mindset. It requires investing wisely, thinking long term, and choosing impact over impulse, because I think that's what trips a lot of people up, not realizing that this is a long-term investment that has got such greater impact than what is immediate and what is normal, or what we've made normal right now. And I think we as Africans need to own our narrative in this energy revolution instead of just watching from the sidelines, but design the systems ourselves, because we've got the resources. If you speak to people overseas, they tell you, oh, the African sun. And so we've got this African sun. We can use the African sun that is scorching if you don't know how to use it well, but powering if you know exactly what to do with it. And so I'd really love to thank you for helping us understand the light behind the lights, because that's what you highly emphasized as you were speaking, and for reminding us that the future isn't just coming, we're actually building it. And so thank you so much for this conversation. I absolutely, absolutely had fun.
Thank you so much, Sister Mbonane, for having invited me to come and share this information that God has placed on my mind.
And I'm going to keep you on speed dial, because I promise I was honest when I said, now I'm thinking about, hey girl, do you want to be a millionaire? Maybe this is the way to go. But now that I've had a conversation with you, it's going to be easy to say, Elder Kandeke, remember that day? Yeah, but all the best for the work that you're doing. I think it's such incredible work. And please believe me when I say you are not hearing from me for the last time.
Thank you. Not so much. And I think you are welcome. Should you need another conversation, please don't hesitate. We are there to share these things, because I think God gave this information to us for a purpose. And I think it is to benefit the church. If you may just allow me, maybe using this platform, just to appeal to even to the listeners out there, that in most of our churches, especially in Southern Africa, we may be grappling with issues of load shedding, because this thing is a reality. We are living it. Load shedding hasn't spared the church. So you find that then it's Sabbath and people are running with genset. If they are in an unsecured place, they have got to go and start it and then cut it off when power comes. But I'll tell you what, to mount solar panels on church rooftops is a cleaner way of generating power. There will be no noise, because then the microphones won't have to be put so loud to compete with the genset sound. You know, we have this problem of generators being run during service, and you have got to speak loudly because there's genset making noise during worship hours, and the preacher is got to compete with the sound of a genset.
A generator.
But if you put solars, if you put solar panels on top of the roof of the church, and you've got your nicely sized inverters and your batteries, you quietly worship God, and all that you have to speak, you'll have no one to compete with, not even a machine called a generator. So I think my appeal to the church is that let's go green, let's go clean. So it's noiseless, there's no dirty, there's no smoke. Solar is clean, solar is green.
Let him who has an ear hear.
Let him hear.
Thank you so much, Elder. This was very insightful. Have a lovely evening.
Mr. Mpumi, thank you so much. And good evening to you.
Cheers.
Thank you. Thank you.
And with that, everybody, I am Sister Mbonane. I'm kidding. I am Nompumelelo Mbonane. And I hope you've just made sense of your business. Fresh mercies tomorrow. Ciao for now.
Adventist World Radio SID Media. We are not general practitioners. We are specialists in Bible-based content.